Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
Okay, okay. Here we are, midweek. WTIC. Lots of fun stuff to discuss this afternoon. We're going to start off with a guest, though, Jill Jacobson. You know, we've been having these younger people on, young people on, and Jill Jacobson is one of them. She's from an organization called Young Voices, and she's from Boston College Law School, if she's still studying, and a really interesting person, a visiting fellow at the Independent Women's Law Center. Jill, welcome back to WTIC. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Everybody's kind of fired up over these student loan things, the forgiveness plans that that the Biden administration is pushing. And there was even a Saturday, there was a headline in the New York Times that I just loved. It basically put into the headline and subhead, matter-of-factly, that this was a vote-buying scheme on the part of a, you know, semi-desperate administration. Do you view it through that same prism?
Yeah, so I think before the Supreme Court struck down Biden's first attempt, there was a better argument that this was to achieve real policy and not just to garner favor with young voters. But now that the Biden administration is attempting the exact same thing, practically through the same mechanism, just 1 year after the Supreme Court strikes it down, it is much do it as a real attempt, and it starts to look more like an election strategy than a real attempt at policy.
Why did it look different the first time?
Yeah, so the first time President Biden tried to forgive student loans en masse under the HEROES Act, which allows some procedural forgiveness in times of national emergency. So this required two big stretches. One, it required a procedural adjustment to mean debt forgiveness en masse. And it also required a national emergency to be the COVID-19 pandemic, which the Supreme Court struck down both of those rationales. They said, you know, the Department of Higher Education can do a lot of procedural things. It can change filing deadlines, things of that nature, but it doesn't have the power to make a huge federal spending decision like student loan forgiveness in totality. And this was meant for national emergencies like world wars. For example, if a bunch of students had to be deployed to a foreign country, of course they wouldn't be able to pay back their student debt. It's things of that nature, not the COVID-19 pandemic, which really disproportionately impacted the financial situations of people without a degree. So the Supreme Court came down hard in saying that the Biden administration really does not have this power, and that if anyone's going to forgive student loan debt en masse, it should be Congress.
So the idea that the president could make changes to the debt owed and the schedule of those payments, is there was overreach there in that the power that Congress wanted to give to the agency was the power to get rid of little details that were messing up the works, not to be able to make structural changes in things that had been controlled by Congress.
Yeah, so what you're hitting on is a doctrine at the Supreme Court called the Major Questions Doctrine. And it essentially stands for the proposition that if Congress wants the executive to do something huge, an act of major political or economic significance, it calls it, it will let them know that. It is not the executive's job to fill in little gaps. They call it elephants in mouse holes, right? If there's a little gap in a statute, the president shouldn't assume that ambiguity means it has broad power. It should mean it has narrow power, unless told otherwise by Congress. So when President Biden saw a little ambiguity in the power to make procedural changes in the face of a national emergency and thought that that meant forgiving billions of student loan because of COVID-19, the Supreme Court used the major questions doctrine to sort of remind him that, no, Congress doesn't hide these huge elephants in mouse holes. They don't give you broad powers in small, ambiguous provisions. If they wanted you to be able to have that huge power, they would have said as much very clearly.
But in this law, this new one that he's trying to make a similar kind of adjustment, it's a different structure, and he has more powers, broader powers, right? So isn't it more likely that this one would work?
Yeah, so you are right to say that this new act that he attempts to forgive student debt under, that he attempts to sort of draw that power from, is broader. It does give more power to the executive, but the question is how much, right? So the Supreme Court said in this first attempt that Congress would have let you know, President Biden, if it wanted you to have this much power to forgive student debt through administrative agencies, and it didn't. So absent some explicit statement from Congress granting you this power, you should assume that you don't have it. And yet President Biden has found a semi-broader statute, but nonetheless still one that does not give that affirmative power to try again. So presumably this will say the same thing and will say, you know, why didn't you bring it under this statute the first time if this somehow magical power that you didn't have the first time you were before this court trying to forgive student debt en masse.
Does that matter to the court that you're coming back? It's like you're trying to pick the lock and the tools you brought the first time didn't work and you're trying to do it again. Is that how they view it, as each event being connected and their patience wears out?
Well, legally, I think if you claim to have statutory power and the court tells you you don't, as an agency, that you need explicit congressional permission, and you don't have congressional permission, and you sort of claim to find it in ambiguity from another statute, yeah, I would assume the Supreme Court would say, we said that you need explicit permission from Congress, and you don't have it. But, you know, politically, it's interesting because when President Trump was in office, there were headlines every day that he was defying the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court had laid down a principle, and it was tyrannical that he was going against it with his attempted policies. But here we don't see that, actually. There is no sort of outcry that President Biden is defying the rule of law, despite the fact that the Supreme Court's been very clear that, you know, this is Congress's prerogative, not the president's. So we'll see how he's treated if it gets to the Supreme Court, which I'm sure it will rather quickly.
We're talking to Jill Jacobson. She's a student at BC Law. She's here via an organization called Young Voices that brings us a lot of different guests who are younger and have a different perspective, perhaps. Jill, it sounds like you're pretty straight up the middle in terms of the way you interpret the law, that you don't like the court rulings that give a lot of leeway where none is specifically called for. Is that fair?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, to give you an interesting fact, Congress has considered over 100 bills about student debt in the past year alone, and it has not forgiven student debt en masse. which means, you know, the voice of the public is working, and public opinion polls and Congress both seem to say that that's not the will of the country. So I'm really not a fan of executive overreach attempting to cudgel against sort of what the consensus of the American people is, particularly during an election year.
If we had the court that we had 5 or 6 years ago, would you feel differently about this? Or are these rulings so clear to you that even a more liberal-leaning court would come up with the same direction that you're suggesting you expect?
I think this court and conservative jurists in general are more hostile to the administrative state, for sure. They don't like the idea that unelected agencies that answer to the executive are encroaching on our lives. I think the democratic means through Congress is the surefire way to go. That being said, this is such an egregious overreach of power that I would imagine courts composed of conservative and liberal jurists would see this as real circumvention of the democratic process.
All right. So you had two stories recently printed, one in the National Review and one in where's the other one? Politico?
I believe the other one was in The Hill.
Oh, The Hill. That's right. So the one about squatters, you know, those stories that were coming out in the last couple of weeks about squatters and the new powers that they had apparently been granted in some places. I'd love to talk to you about that. We have to take a quick break and then we'll do it. Okay, Jill?
Sounds great.
All right. Stay with us. More coming up on WTIC.
Never miss a moment. Go listen to the Todd Feinberg podcast on the Odyssey app.
WTIC, we're talking law with Jill Jacobson, a law student at Boston College. And we've been talking about the student loan forgiveness pursuits of the Biden administration. But also over the past couple of weeks, stories about squatters have been popping up, not just in the U.S., but elsewhere in the world, too. And I wonder how this happened all of a sudden. Do you know what it was that drove the squatter thing into the news, Jill? Oh, sorry. Hold on 1 second. I didn't put you on the air yet. Now you can talk.
Yeah, it's interesting because these cases of quote unquote squatters are actually not true adverse possession cases as we might normally think of them. The vast majority of them are just plain trespassers and holdover tenants.
So have legal entities in certain municipalities or states been misunderstanding them, or has the media been telling us the wrong story? What's going on?
Yeah, so it's a few things. The first of which is that these people are taking advantage of a loophole in the law that's actually there for a really good reason. So a lot of places have laws on the book that say you cannot just go and evict someone, even if you think they are an improper tenant. You need proof. You have to have what's called a judicial eviction proceeding, which means you have to go into court and give a good reason as to why this person should leave. And under normal circumstances, that's there for a really good reason. Imagine you get in a dispute with your landlord because they refuse to fix something. You don't want them to be able to show up with the police an hour later and kick you out of the place you've been living for a year. Those protections are definitely there for a reason. But the problem is they do not apply to trespassers. They don't apply to squatters. And a lot of cities and states need to clarify that because for some reason it is spread mostly on social media that they can take advantage of this loophole in the law.
So is there actually a loophole, or did one emerge because people were pressing against the structures that have worked fine in more normal times? Is it possible that there are wacky leftist leaning people in power positions and even judges, and they see something as a perplexing situation that is kind of obvious?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is a misapplication and misinterpretation of these people of the doctrine of adverse possession, which has longstanding roots. It goes back to Roman law, and it's for efficient land use. So in a nutshell, what it means is if you come across abandoned land and you tend it, you live on it as your own, you improve it for a period, it's usually between 10 and 30 years, depending on the state, you can apply for legal title to that land. But that is for abandoned property, right? Mm-hmm. This is a doctrine to encourage efficient land use. You don't sneak into someone's home when they're on vacation and expect to walk away with the deed and be able to host Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, so there what happened? Year. How did it suddenly come into that world where somebody just goes to the movies and they come back and someone else is living in their home?
Yeah, so I think it's two things. I think the first thing is we've seen an unbelievable dissemination of encouragement of squatters online on places like Twitter and TikTok and Instagram. People are telling others that they can do this and they'll be able to get these rights, which obviously they don't understand the legal doctrine and they're mistaken, but it's also emblematic of this broader sort of decline in respect for property rights. There mm-hmm. are very few instances of squatting in places like Florida and Texas that are really stringent on property rights. We're seeing it in the cities like San Francisco, like New York City. The places that no longer arrest people for theft under $900 are also seeing this uptick in squatting.
But if somebody is squatting in a space for which they have no documents to prove themselves legal residents, like they don't have a lease that they can show, how would they ever get anybody to, even a cop coming to the scene trying to, you know, a cop has to make decisions on a regular basis about who's giving them the true story and who's faking it. Wouldn't they, as soon as they saw somebody didn't have documents to produce, like a lease, that they wouldn't have a right to be there?
Yeah, so this is where we see a big difference in the laws. So, for example, in places like Florida, cops are allowed to make that judgment call. And later you can hash it out in court if you were improperly evicted. But in places like New York, they're not allowed to. The onus is to go into court and get a court order in order to have help getting squatters out of their home from police. So law enforcement's essentially powerless to help the owner absent a court order, which takes a really long time to get in a lot of places.
Like how long?
There are cases of true owners being put out of their property for months to years, waiting to get a simple piece of paper in court to reinforce what everyone knows, which is that there are clear trespassers in their home.
But this is a total breakdown of the idea of having an orderly, law-based society.
It certainly is. This is why general deterrence is so important. We're seeing that many of these people, particularly the ones who are filming themselves online, that they have no fear of the repercussions. And it's probably because they have committed other types of property crime that have gone unenforced, under-prosecuted, and they probably walk away with zero consequences. So,
wow.
You know, you cannot blame them for expecting no consequences to follow. And unfortunately, in some of these places with progressive prosecutors, they're probably right.
So be careful where you buy property. You have to really know the jurisdiction that you're in.
Well, one could say that. I mean, I am a fan of the moving with your feet argument, but I would prefer that we hold officials' feet to the fire to protect private property rights, considering it's the American way for so many years.
Can't argue with that, Jill. All right. Thank you so much. It's been great talking with you again.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Bye.
Jill Jacobson. She's studying law at BC Law School in the Boston area. And she's a visiting fellow at the Independent Women's Law Center and a contributor at an organization called Young Voices, youngvoices.org, where we get young people, a slew of them, to come on and talk. It's encouraging, too, that there are young people who make sense, which is a nice... There is a tendency to wonder if we will ever have a sensical society again, and these kids hopefully provide some sense that that's possible. All right, I have silly questions and serious questions, and let me give you a silly one quick, and then we'll go to news. I want to know what word that you hear used today, maybe more now than ever before, that drives you crazy. Words that drive you crazy, that'll be the backdrop of other questions we ask. As we continue after news on
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
UTIC.
Why wait? Come on. Oh, come on. Why wait? You can rant right now at 860-751-4698 on the Todd Feinberg Show.
WTIC. So first question. This is just kind of a backdrop question. You can answer whenever you like, or when you're answering another question. But I'm looking for to collect words that you're offended by. Words that you wish were no longer part of the English language. You wish you had the power maybe to decide which is which. By the way, on the issue of squatters, there's a story out of New York where a lot of this is going on. New York City residents who are accused of being squatters can qualify for free legal assistance. That's according to Newsweek magazine. Yep, you can get free legal assistance if you are squatting illegally in New York City, because all the power now goes to the vandals of civilized society rather than those in pursuit of it. 860-522-9842. Oh, and then I've got a serious question I wanted to ask. There's a lot of talk about, with the jury selection going on in Trump's trial in New York, there's a lot of talk about finding jurors who can be impartial. Now, there's no way you don't have an opinion about Donald Trump and about his cases and which way you'd rather see rulings go. People are very, probably more than anyone in history, people are very dug in on Donald Trump. And I wanted to ask if you think you could be impartial. 860-522-9842. Aaron West Hartford. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah. On the Donald Trump juror issue, I believe I could be impartial. I did vote for him twice, but I was upset with how he, conducted himself after the 2020 election. And for a long while, maybe I still feel that his actions disqualified by himself from running again, because I felt that, when 50 judges, many of them appointed by Republicans, say there's no there, President Trump, with these notions of, whatever.
The stolen ballot elections, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That eventually in our system, I feel you should stand down and, have a peaceful transfer of power like we have had for a couple hundred years.
Yes.
So I felt, yeah, that I still have some problem with that.
Okay.
And then regarding a phrase that annoys me, it's like when people seem to say, instead of either thank you or I appreciate it, they combine them and say, I appreciate you.
Oh, and isn't that gross?
Yeah, it's like, well, maybe you appreciate this one little thing I did, but you can't appreciate all of me.
The whole of me? How can you know the whole of me to appreciate? There's so much to appreciate.
It's something like that. It just sort of like, I heard it first maybe a couple years ago. I'm like, what? Really?
It's one of those contrived bits of fakery, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. It seems phony.
I hate that. Yeah, it's like you're some kind of self-help guru or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something like that. But it just, yeah. I don't like it. And so I either say thank you or I appreciate it. Don't combine the two into I appreciate you, please.
All right. Thank you for that, Aaron. Nice to hear from you.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you.
860-522-9842. I appreciate you. I have trouble saying it. It hurts. Pete's in East Hartford. Hi, Pete.
Hey, good afternoon. It's amazing how even a Trump supporter wanted to see a peaceful transition, not when the election was stolen. Come on, wake up. Anyhow, let's go to the phrases. I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to go with very bad grammar.
Okay.
You know what I hate? And these ads and these companies that make products or whatever, and they encourage it. Bad grammar, okay? I'll be listening to, you know, it's on the Odyssey app. Another thing about their ads, they'll have Tide detergent. Now, I come out of the grocery retail business for 100 million years, and that's a big black person brand. They love their Tide.
Oh, really?
Okay. I'm just saying it from experience. I'm not.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that there's a brand breakdown on soap.
Have an ad. Yeah, now they have an ad. Then they have an ad, and they have this black woman in the store talking about, I don't know if you've ever heard it. She grabs the mic and she says, telling people about the Tide, and she uses all poor grammar. I can't remember right now it, but all poor grammar. Black people are not ignorant. Okay, they're not stupid. They're educated just like everybody else. Okay, grammar is taught in school, and basically, like I like how they say, instead of saying "I have," "I got." Okay, that's poor grammar. I got me a McDonald's hamburger. You know, that's poor grammar.
Well, sometimes it's poor grammar, but poor grammar can be situational. Like if you're sitting around watching a football game with friends, you don't use necessarily the same level of propriety in your grammatical choices as you might if you're having dinner with coworkers, say.
Right. But if you just listen to the ads, okay, listen to the ads.
So it rubs you the wrong way is what you're saying.
It rubs me the wrong way because it encourages bad behavior. And
suggests a certain level of prejudice against certain groups of people.
Right. And it's making them look uneducated and stupid, okay, which is not true. Okay, so they're just pushing it out there, and you know it's the liberal Democrats, all these phonies. They're supposed to be the black man's friend. They're not the black man's friend. They're shoving them a step backwards every day.
Yeah, that is for darn sure. All right, so that's just right. What Pete did is just right there, because he's talking about what gets his goat. Speaking of which. Words that get overused. Goat is like the new thing, right? Ever since Tom Brady, anybody who's vaguely good at something is suddenly a goat, which always meant something bad, but now it means something good. Now it means the greatest ever. Jack's next from Bosra. Hi, Jack.
Hey.
What's happening? What kind of phone are you talking on? We're getting bad phasing things going on. Are you on a speakerphone?
No, it's just a bad cell phone.
Oh, it sounds much better now. Go ahead.
But speaking of God, having
now it's gone bad again. Speaking about what?
Goat.
Okay.
My sister-in-law. But she says she wants to go on a phone. But people being evicted in Connecticut, they get free legal counsel also, whether they're squatters or not.
Well, for evictions, I can understand it, but if somebody's scamming you, shouldn't the system just look at them cross-eyed and throw them out?
I would think so. I definitely would think so. But in Connecticut, it's the same thing, you know.
It's gross.
It's all liberal stuff. You know?
Yes. There's too many of those, Jack.
I think so. Very good.
And you've got a liberal cell phone. Throw that thing away and get a new one, please. 860-522-9842. Who's laughing? Is that you, Roland? Laughing in my ear? Are you doing that on the air, I hope? Well, don't. If you're not willing to share it with everybody, don't ruin the fun. Come on, man. So we're asking a question. What word do you wish wasn't in the language? Or it can be a phrase. That's fine. But people are doing phrases only. It doesn't have to just be phrases. It can just be a word. You know, as something, young people have some really weird things. Like they don't say, if you say thank you to somebody who's under the age of, say, 30 today, does anybody know somebody under the age of 30 who would say you're welcome back? What's the answer? Oh, thank you. You say to the person who makes your cappuccino and they say, oh, no, you're good. Or they say, of course. Right? Why does that bother me? Sean in New Britain. Hello, Sean.
I've got two. This drives me crazy. Let me get a. Yeah, let me get a McMuffin. Let me get a Coke.
Wait, are you talking about when you're ordering it? Like that's what you say to the server?
Yes. Let me get a pack of smokes. Let me get is not a word. And second of all, the person has to get it for you. So a lot of times when someone in front says, in front of me in line, yeah, let me get a, I'll say, no, sir. See, they have to get it for you. You can't do that. You'll have to go over the counter. That's illegal. There's cameras here.
You're a stickler, huh? You're not good at rolling with the punches.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm doing it as a ball buster, of course.
Yeah.
And then as far as, you know, thank you, you're welcome. I got you.
I got you.
I say, I got you. And I say, bless you, you know, because it's a sneeze. I got you. But yeah, let me get up.
Got you.
Yeah, I got you. Bless you. That's all I got. Love your show. See ya.
Thank you, sir.
Let me get up. Go.
Let me get another call from you soon, Sean, okay? That's all I got. That's all I got. That could be somebody's pet peeve. We're talking peeve language. Yeah, the young people can't say you're welcome. I don't know when that died and how it happened, but it did. 860-522-9842. Quick break. We'll take some more phone calls. Coming up on WTIC.
It's Todd Feinberg. It's Todd Feinberg. Monday through Friday, 3 till 6 on WTIC. News Talk 1080.
I got you. I hadn't thought about that one. Let me get a. Let me get a McMuffin, please. But yeah, we talk like that. Humans talk like that. American humans, anyway. 860-522-9842. Any words you can't stand? Any phrases that drive you up a wall? Huh? Pet peeve of mine is definitely the thing that people can't say you're welcome anymore. Really nice kids work at my favorite coffee shop. You know, they're in their 20s and they have these generation gap ways of speaking. And I really like them. But it's always funny the way to me when you say thank you for the cappuccino and they say, oh, enjoy, or oh, it's no problem. Well, I didn't say it was a problem. I just said thank you. Can't you just respond to that? Craig's in the car. Hi, Craig.
The one I hate, and it's not necessarily the word, it's the application of it, is why people have to insert the word right in the middle of every sentence that they make, right?
I was listening to a podcast, right, last night, right? And every time, right, the woman would pause for a right of breath. The word right was in there, and it really made it hard to understand. It was like adding this staccato thing to what she was saying.
It's like they use it as a punctuation mark of some sort. And it's insulting because you're almost implying that every statement you're saying is correct and everybody's got to agree with you, right?
I think it's a mark of insecurity and just poor speaking. It used to be that you were taught to speak appropriately because everybody around you would do it and expect it. And now that doesn't happen anymore. Now, there's one that's very similar. I wonder if you've noticed that that is not as common, maybe, but is even more stupid. And that is people who know exactly what they're saying. Really smart people, educated people, will put a qualifier in front of a definitive statement. They will say something that casts doubt upon themselves. He sort of looked like he was well-dressed. He sort of said, they put sort of in front of things when they're not, there's no doubt in the statement that they're making.
I understood. Yes. All right. So I am going to give you a word that I'd like blown up. And that's equity.
Equity.
Everything's equity.
Everything is equity. But I think that's political. You're welcome to use it. But the reason they talk about equity so much is because they want to make it seem like we know what they're talking about, when in fact they've never defined the term for us. Ann's in Florida next. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are you?
What's happening, Ann?
I'm actually playing hooky this afternoon. But,
congratulations.
I have a word and I have a phrase. And the word I cannot stand is duh.
and people, used in what case?
Like, if you make a statement and someone's being nasty or sarcastic with you.
Oh, you're
rude.
Saying something obvious, or you're asking an obvious question.
Yes. And the answer, the reply you get is duh. And I just think that's very rude. I can't stand it.
It is. It's unpleasant and unnecessary. Yeah, I share that one with you.
Yeah. And then the phrase is woulda or would've. The correct use is would have.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people don't even know that. They think that it's correct to say woulda.
They've been hearing it for so long.
Or would have.
Yeah.
And I, years ago, I was running a word processing pool, and I had to correct so many people.
They would type that?
They would be transcribing, and they would hear the person speaking say, well, maybe the person speaking would be wrong as well,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes they wouldn't be, and they would transcribe it as...
The people assumed what they were hearing was the slang.
Right. So those are my two choices.
Those are really good ones, Ann. Thank you for
that. Thank you.
Nice to hear from you. Nice to hear from you, Ann. Duh.
It's nice to talk to you, too. And when you left early a couple weeks ago, I got to talk to Todd.
Tom.
To Tom, mm-hmm. who I can never talk to because I'm always working.
So that was very
nice.
I'm glad I got to give you that little gift. Thank you so much, Ann. 860-522-9842. We'll take more phone calls on this. What word do you want eliminated from the English language or phrase? And Mark Christopher uses a lot of those, but I won't say anything about it. Let's just keep this between us, okay? We'll go to Mark
you
Christopher.
You mean the one that starts with an F and ends with a K?
F and...
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.